Coming up on Golf Today, LPGA Rookie of the Year, Taya Tinikun joins us from Naples. Why is she so comfortable as a 19-year-old on tour, and what does she love to do away from the golf course? And Jon Rahm sees flaws in the new official world golf ranking system. He called the system laughable, and then he said it again. Find out why Jon is so upset and if he has a point. Plus, the World Golf Hall of Fame member graces these airwaves. Mark O'Meara says hello as we celebrate 25 years of First Tee. Celebrate holiday. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Into Poppy's Pond will belong to Jennifer Kupcho.
The phenom has done it again.
For one of the greats of her generation, Lydia Ko.
I didn't think I'd ever play again or contend, but here I am.
It's been tough.
Lots of ups and lots of downs. Feels really good to be back on top.
And it all comes down to this. This week, the LPGA ends its season as the top players on the year-long CME Globe standings vie for the chance to become the race to the CME Globe champion. The CME Group Tour Championship begins tomorrow at Tiburon Golf Club in Naples, Florida. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week magazine. I've enjoyed this season, the rebirth of Lydia Ko, the rebounding of Nelly Korda, and the resplendence of Taya Tinikun.
And this is the kind of week where the rubber meets the road in a lot of places in the golf world this week, Damon. It's not just that we have the LPGA Tour season finale. The DP World Tour has its finale over in Dubai. We have the last event on the PGA Tour, the RSM Classic, which determines the reshuffle priority of a lot of guys as they head into the new year. Even the DP World Tour Q School finishes today. So there's a lot of room for heroics and heartbreak out there.
That's what this game is all about. Let's take a look who's in the race to the CME Globe and take a look at how the last 3 years have played out. Always a lot of tension and excitement. How about 2019? Remember Se-young Kim made this curling, breaking, speedy 25-foot birdie putt on the 72nd hole to beat Charlie Hull by one shot and win the CME Group Tour Championship, as well as the race to the CME Globe. And the win marked the third of her season, and with it, a $1.5 million first prize, which was the largest payday for a winner in women's golf.
For the following year, Damon, in 2020, Jin Young Ko won the race to the CME Globe. During the COVID-19 pandemic that year, Ko had stayed in her native Korea, where she made six starts on the Korean LPGA Tour and teed it up only four times on the LPGA Tour that season. But she won the CME Group Tour Championship thanks to five birdies in the last seven holes. And last year, it was deja vu all over again. She capped off an incredible season by defending her title at the CME Group Tour Championship. Despite playing with a sore wrist, Ko hit her last 63 greens in regulation, made 24 birdies and one bogey during that stretch. And with the win, she won the race to the CME Globe, also clinched the Rolex LPGA Player of the Year award over Nelly Korda after a pretty tight season-long battle.
Fantastic rivalry one season ago. So how about the details this week? 72 hole with no cut, 60 player field, 57 of the top 60 players on the CME Globe standings entered. Top 11 players in the Rolex rankings in the field, and the CME Group Tour Championship winner is named the race to the CME Globe champion. So it's a winner take all format. Everyone in this field has a chance to be crowned the race to the CME Globe champ. Do you like this format?
I like it. To an extent, I like it a little more than I like what we do at the FedEx Cup finale. There's, you know, they're two season-long races. At what point does the regular season stop counting in a postseason? Now, in fairness, the LPGA Tour does not market this as a postseason event. It's not a series of playoffs in the way we have on the PGA Tour. So I think it's closer to the reality. But how do you get how do you make the regular season count for something? Where is that ability to find home field advantage without putting your thumb on the scale too much? And I would argue that's a detriment to the FedEx Cup playoffs, is that the regular season counts for too much as you move into the playoffs, because most sports, it doesn't. If you have a home field advantage in one game, it ends there and it's a new free-for-all. And to me, this is closer to what I'd like to see, but I still wonder if there ought to be some kind of happy medium here. Maybe introduce a cut or something that maybe it makes the last couple of days count for more and there's a further winnowing process happens Thursday, Friday. But I like what they do here more so than what the PGA Tour is doing right now.
I'm smiling because I wrote down almost word for word. It's probably the cleanest with the least amount of math. I prefer to the staggered start of the PGA Tour FedEx Cup finale. I'm just not quite comfortable with it yet. Not saying we haven't had great drama with Rory and Scottie Scheffler, for example, but I'm just not comfortable with 72 holes and the math not leading to the champion in a clean way. In Naples, it does. 60 players in the field, okay, not a lot of jeopardy. We have seen in the past that's usually that the strongest players of that season, the strongest players on the LPGA, tend to win this great championship. It's usually a Lydia Ko type of player, a Jin Young Ko, a Lexi Thompson. We're seeing a lot of chalk get it done. So I don't know how you rejigger that. Maybe it's a cut. Is it a smaller field? But then maybe the folks on the ground won't have enough golf to watch. So with you, I think it's closer, it's cleaner to what I want to see, but I'm not entirely ready to say that it's 100% the way that I want it to be.
I would argue that perhaps what they ought to do is give some of the $2 million check that's going to be handed out this week, which is the biggest in women's golf history. Perhaps a portion of that should have been paid out last week when the season-long standings drew to a close with Lydia Ko on top. And then you pay out the enormous check here for the finale this week as well. It feels as though the regular season doesn't get any acknowledgement when you get to the finale, whereas it gets too much acknowledgement in the men's game. You know, it's an easy problem to have because we're talking about quality players here. To your point, no mugs have won this tournament. No mugs are in the field in this tournament. This is the best that the LPGA Tour and the women's game has to offer who are playing here. So it's a deserving winner, whoever wins it. It's just a matter of calling this a season-long race, and then the season itself doesn't seem to count for very much at the end, other than qualifying for this free-for-all we're going to see the next four days.
Doesn't really kind of connect to the regular season, but it doesn't take away from the fantastic event that this is, and also what a wonderful season that we've seen so far in 2022. When you recap some of the major championship winners, for example, Jennifer Kupcho adding a major to her Augusta National Women's Amateur, Minji Lee adding a second major, Inji Chun a third, Brooke Henderson a second major, Ashley Buhai that historic week at Muirfield, remarkable bunker play. She beat Inji Chun in a playoff. And a lot of first-time winners. You had Leona Maguire, for example, the first LPGA winner from Ireland. You had Jodi Ewert-Shadoff winning for the first time in her 246th start. Gemma Dryburgh became the fourth Scot to win on the LPGA Tour. With more on these winners, let's welcome in Amy Rogers from the CME Group Tour Championship. Good afternoon, Amy.
Hey there, Damon. Well, we talked a lot this week about the life-changing $2 million that someone will win here on Sunday at the CME Group Tour Championship. But for the 11 first-time winners who are all in the field here this week, they've already enjoyed a life-changing moment earlier this season in getting their breakthrough win out here on the LPGA Tour. I had a chance to speak with a number of these first-time winners during the Pro-Am here this morning, and the buzzword among them was confidence when asked about how getting that first win has influenced them both personally and professionally.
Yeah, it was obviously a huge confidence boost early in the season and kind of sort of solidified my season, let me kind of pick and choose what events I wanted to play, got me into all the majors and all of that. And yeah, nice to be back this year at CME as a first-time winner, get to go to that Rolex dinner tomorrow night as a winner, got to go there as part of the Solheim Cup last year, so nice to be back in a different capacity this year.
All the players in the field this week have a chance of winning that $2 million that's on the line. Does that change your approach at all when you know there's a huge purse like that this week and a huge winner's check floating out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously life-changing money. We don't get to play for that kind of money ever. So you're trying to do as well as you possibly can this week. It's obviously the last event of the season, so you're trying to finish it off as strong as possible. So, 60 girls, everyone has a chance, so you want it to be you.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a great year. You know, to finally after 11 years getting that first win, it just makes the season ever so sweet. So, it's great to be here at the CME Group Championship, and it's just been an incredible year and just really happy to be here.
As you said, that long wait to getting that first win, now having become a winner out here on the LPGA Tour, how has that impacted you as both a person and as a player?
Yeah, it's done, you know, an incredible amount for my confidence, you know, to, you know, finally prove to myself that I am able to do it. It just makes moving forward a lot easier, you know, knowing that I can play under those kinds of nerves and pressure, and it just makes next season a lot more easier for me, and you know, get to pick and choose what I play in, so it's nice too.
Obviously, it's such a confidence boost. I mean, you want to believe that you can win out here, but until you do it and prove it, there's always a little bit of doubt. So, you know, I'm hoping that this is going to be the start of something, and I'm hopefully going to go from strength to strength.
How do you feel different coming into the season-ending event, now having become a first-time winner out here on tour?
Yeah, again, it's a confidence boost. You know, it's hard to... We wish we could replicate and bubble that up, but that's just not how this game works. It's hard, and it's going to change week to week. But, you know, as long as you're striving, you try to practice the same things and do the same things well over and over. And the goal is to get yourself in contention and then hopefully you have a chance to win another tournament.
It meant a lot. It gave me a big confidence boost. Game hasn't been as good as it lately, but I'll still remember that win, and it was still amazing.
Coming into this event now as a first-time winner, does that change how you feel or your approach at all, knowing that there's $2 million floating out there that you could win this week?
I mean, it's always nice having a win on your back. You know you can win out here, so obviously that gives you a little bit more confident. And I'm definitely going to try my best to win that $2 million purse.
What do you try and do next? Once you've gotten that first win, what's the next goal for you?
Win on that, my second one.
And getting that second win, as you heard Ashley Buhai say there, isn't as easy as just bottling that winning formula and pulling it out on a week like this to try and win again. But perhaps confidence is that magic elixir. It's certainly what these first-time winners will be bringing to this season-ending event. Coming into this week now for the first time, not just with the belief that they have what it takes to win out here, but knowing that they do. Damon?
11 first-time winners, tying a record. Amy Rogers for us in Naples. Now, here's what you can watch. The CME Group Tour Championship. You can see, you can watch it on Golf Channel, also digitally as well, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Final round on NBC and Peacock. Big week on the LPGA, the season ender.
Just a reminder, you can catch first round coverage from the RSM Classic tomorrow at noon Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. And we just heard Rex and Ryan discussing next year's fall schedule. For more on what that might look like and what the players are saying, we say hello to Kira Kate Dixon, live on the range at Sea Island, Georgia. Kira, what's the latest you're hearing?
Well, Eamon, as Rex and Ryan were just alluding to, there's going to be a lot of changes come this time next year. The only things that we really know for certain right now, or the way that it's been set up, is that the top 125 in the FedEx Cup standings are able to retain their status and be fully exempt for the following season. That number is now going down to 70, which leads us to believe that there's going to be some sort of a system where those outside of the top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings will have to battle it out to better their standings going into the following season, which is now going to be on a calendar year system. So we went to several players today because, as we said, we don't know a lot of the details of exactly how this is going to all play out, and see what would they do if they were perhaps the commissioner for the day, and how would they visualize this portion of the schedule for the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I mean, this is my 12th year out here, and I remember my first year on tour was 2012, and that was the last year of the old PGA Tour schedule before the wraparound season. And we still had fall events to where if you wanted to play, you could play, and if you made it all the way to the Tour Championship and didn't want to play in the fall, you didn't have to play, and you wouldn't really lose points or feel like you get left behind in the fall. So I kind of wish they went back to that, to where they still have the fall events, because I love the fall events. I love the RSM Classic. I don't really want to see those go away, but just to have it, if guys want to play, they can play. And maybe it's not attached to the FedEx Cup. Maybe it is. We'll see. But I loved it back in 2012. I feel like it gave you free time if you wanted to have an off season and have a couple months off.
I've typically played twice in the fall, which even if I've played fairly decent in the fall, I start out in Hawaii and I feel like I'm playing catch up until the summer, and that's a tough feeling because I'm not taking time off. I'm specifically taking time off to help me perform better the following year, but also know that there's a lot of amazing sponsors and people and companies behind our fall events, and we've had a great run here in the fall for, like you said, about 8 or 9, 10 years, and I don't really know, to be honest, what I would do. It's hard to make everyone happy. It seems like half the tour wants to go home for 3 months and half the tour wants to keep playing.
More storylines in the fall, I think, is better for the game of golf. So that's what I have. I think you're going to have a pretty heavy fall. I mean, guys aren't going to take – I mean, there's some guys are going to take those months off, but I think plenty of them are going to play. I mean, not always all our top players finish in the top 70, so they may want to claw their way back through the fall, and it's a good way to get your game back intact. It's the fall series and season, and I think that's what will happen. I don't think – there's been a lot of talk the fall's going to be weak. I don't think the fall's going to be weak.
I'm still in the mind frame that the season starts in January. That's just that's my old school mentality, you know, pre-FedEx Cup and all that. So I like the changes that are coming in time. If I was commissioner – I think we should all have to play, you know, maybe one or two little pro-ams here and there for, you know, a little bit of cash, a little bit of fun, hang out with some of our sponsors, and then we all have to go watch football on Saturdays and Sundays. I have to watch football Friday nights because I got a boy that's playing in high school and getting ready for the state championship. Go Knights. So my fall would revolve around football. And hanging out with family, tailgating, maybe some dark brown water and some frosty mugs to boot. No, but all seriousness, I like what's around the horizon. I think Jay's done a tremendous job. I think the board's doing a great job, and seeing some new additions will be great for our entire product.
It's been all kinds of different formats in the fall. Played a long season all the way to the Tour Championship, which would run almost into November, and you know, it's all different kinds of. I just want to keep PGA Tour golf going as long as we can. So it's changed a little bit in the fall. It'll be different again next year. But as long as we play, give guys playing opportunities. When I was on the board, that's what we said every meeting, playing opportunities, playing opportunities. So creating more playing opportunities, that's why we play two golf courses at the RSM Classic, because it gets more guys a chance to play. So ideally, if I was commissioner for the day, I'd make this an elevated event. And make sure that Davis got to play for a few more years, selfishly, play for the big money. But no, as long as we keep giving money to charity and the fall continues on for the young guys to have playing opportunities, then mission accomplished here.
You know, every tour player says they want an off season until they get one. So my opinion, I laugh at that notion. I think guys want to feel like they're not losing ground by not playing. So in that category or how we're going to do it, they're going to feel okay taking time off, but there's no way they're going to stay away for 3 months. I think you'll see a lot of top players still playing.
So as you can see, there are plenty of things on the table, plenty of different viewpoints, so we will just have to wait and see what the PGA Tour decides to do with this portion of the schedule next year. But one thing is staying the same, at least here this week. There are 16 current tour pros that live here in Sea Island, and all of them are in the field this week at the RSM Classic, so very much a traditional big Georgia contingency here.
Kira K. Dixon live from the Golden Isles. Very interesting conversation with these players. Eamon, these commissioners for a day seem a little bit confused. Can you imagine all these different opinions? Webb wants a little time off. Davis talking about playing opportunities. I want tension. I want definition. I don't want this part of the year to suddenly become, you know, so secondary that the events don't matter.
But if you think the commissioners for a day are confused, the guy who actually has the job is probably pretty confused as well right now. There's so many moving pieces here, and all we know is what we don't know
right
at this stage. We don't know how many stops there are going to be. Jay Monahan said there would be at least six, but currently there are nine, so that raises the issue, are we losing some? What are we playing for? At this point, the fall schedule has no real identity. There's no meaning to it other than getting a head start on FedEx Cup points while all of the big guns are playing somewhere else.
Right.
And is it going to be a reshuffle for guys who miss the playoffs to get certain priority or a card to play the full calendar year schedule in 2024? There's obviously uncertainty that comes with that for the sponsors
right.
as well. What are they getting? There's tremendous uncertainty on what top players among the upper tier are going to show up. We know they've been committed to basically play 20 events or 19 of 20 during the elevated events, along with three non-elevated events. There's also a report that one of those non-elevated events can be a fall event. So you may actually see some of the big names in there. A lot of those guys will also going to be playing on the DP World Tour as well as part of that kind of strategic alliance where the DP World Tour moves to the center floor in the fall. See, there's just so much that is not settled. The only thing that has been settled at this point is the elevated events. What the rest of it is up for grabs.
I like what Charlie Hoffman had to say. It's about having storylines at this time of the year. Often in the fall, we do see some tears and we meet some new stars that may help carry the sport for the summertime when they get their feet wet in the fall. I just hope that there's some tension and an opportunity maybe to have some more strategic alliance, have a little DP World Tour sprinkled into the fall, perhaps, and maybe you get some of the European players here or the Americans there. I just want to see something that kind of keeps and holds our attention, because Zach Johnson, he may have been making a joke, but football is a behemoth. And when folks get to the fall and they put their jackets on and they want that brown water, as he talked about, a lot of the other sports can kind of fade into the background. So whatever Jay Monahan comes up with, it's going to take a lot of brain power and a lot of ingenuity, something that grabs the attention of the golf fan and that keeps us interested in a time of the calendar that's very, very busy and competitive.
And Davis Love was only half joking, really, when he talked about the playing opportunities being right, a front of mind on the board. Well, that's kind of what got us into this position in the first place, is this idea that things are kind of diluted a little bit too much. So now we're trying to separate the elite into a separate tier that will draw fan interest. The rest of it needs to find an identity. And this is, I guess, part of the process. But these guys need to plan ahead, so the information's got to be coming soon.
There's no accident that Ryan Lavner had all those G and Georgia Bulldog trinkets behind his set there. Football is no joke. It's a big-time business here in the U.S., as you know.
We know where his priorities lie.
Golf Today.
Damon Hack, Eamon Lynch, Hour 2 of Golf Today rolls on. A little bit about Rory McIlroy in just a little bit. Last hour, I posed the question. I said, hopefully this Rom, Rory, not kind of seeing the game through the same lens at this point, doesn't spill over to Marco Simone. It was kind of a throwaway line before we went on to the rest of the show. Any concerns at all that these two continue to kind of not see the game the same way?
I don't think their differences are on anything fundamental at all. I mean, arguing over the merits of the algorithm behind the official world golf ranking points, there were bigger disputes that existed between Seve and, well, pretty much everyone back in the glory days of the European Ryder Cup team. And we've seen much bigger disputes on either side of Ryder Cup locker rooms, even in more recent years, certainly Brooks Bryson last time around. So I don't think it's a major issue at all. Rahm has made some comments about in terms of Rory's influence on the PGA Tour's direction, but that's also because Rory's a member of the PGA Tour's board and has been on the policy committee for the last few years as well, which John Rahm hasn't. So it's by default that Rory McIlroy has kind of moved into that role as well. And, you know, any player who wants to get involved certainly has a voice in doing so if they wish. So I don't see any dispute between them having any real meat on the bone, to be honest.
Yeah, and once the Ryder Cup rolls around, you have to think all of those European boats will be rowing in the same direction. Speaking of Rory McIlroy, here's what you need to know on this Wednesday. Rory, who won the FedEx Cup for the third time back in August at Eastlake, has a chance to do something that only one other player has done. That is to win the FedEx Cup and the Race to Dubai in the same year. That was Henrik Stenson, by the way, back in 2013. The Race to Dubai is now called the DP World Tour standings, as Rory's seeking this rare double.
Well, McIlroy's first DP World Tour title came back in 2012, a year in which he won five times. And 2 years later, in 2014, he won the race for a second time. He collected two majors and a World Golf Championship event that season. And McIlroy's third title came the following year, 2015, when he won by a single shot in Dubai to become the first player to win in back-to-back years. And at the FedEx Cup on this side of the Atlantic, his first victory at Eastlake came back in 2016 when he prevailed in a playoff over Ryan Moore and Kevin Chappell. McIlroy's second FedEx Cup title came in 2019 when he joined Tiger Woods as the only two-time winner of the FedEx Cup. Earlier this year, Rory overcame a six-shot deficit in the final round at Eastlake to defeat Scottie Scheffler to become the only three-time winner of the title.
Yeah, it's been a pretty strong year for Rory McIlroy. Let's take a look at his worldwide results entering this week. 21 starts, 3 victories, couple runner-up finishes as well, 14 top 10s, just 1 missed cut. Now, Rory met the media on Tuesday to talk about his year.
In terms of consistency, especially in the majors, it's probably I didn't win one of those big four, but second at Augusta, third at the Open, you know, fifth at the US Open, and eighth at the PGA. Like, it's been very, very consistent. I feel I've said this year felt very, very similar to 2019. Very similar numbers in terms of strokes gained. If anything, I was a little better this year, stats-wise. Better around the greens. Definitely putted better. It's the first time I ever finished in the top 20 in putting on the PGA Tour this year. So it's really nice at this stage in my career, 15 years in, I'm still finding ways to improve. You know, that's a really positive thing going forward. So it's been a great year, and I'm excited to see where I can go from here because, as I said, to see those improvements 15 years into a career is something that excites me moving forward.
Don't bet against this man the way Rory McIlroy is talking. I'm curious, Eamon, when you listen to what he has to say, the stats bear out improvement, the wedge game, the putting. I feel like he's gotten to a point in his career with his family, with his voice, that, yeah, he wants to win a green jacket, but he doesn't necessarily need to win a green jacket. He wants to win more majors, but I don't think he necessarily needs to. And by not needing to, maybe those big trophies will tumble his way.
I guess we still measure Rory McIlroy's success in a given year by major
we
championships.
Do.
It's how fans and certainly the media tend to cover it. But don't you feel as though it sounds as though Rory has broadened his definition of what a successful year is, including granular stuff, talking about specific areas of his game where he just simply wants the performance to be better. But it's also this idea of the success coming in terms of the bar he's setting for himself. And that's not just a performance bar. In terms of what he's done outside the ropes this year, it could very easily have been a distraction. I know you and I have had this debate whether it's a distraction or fuel. It certainly seems that your argument early in the year that it was fuel has proven to be the right one in this. But it's his impact this year will extend far beyond the calendar in terms of what the PGA Tour looks like. And it's just, to me, it's interesting that he seems to have a different metric by which he judges the success of a year, both granular and, I guess, big picture, certainly then beyond four majors.
I really thought that the Whistling Straits, those tears on Sunday, I thought that that was a cathartic moment for him. I thought it would lead to some wonderful play. Sometimes Rory McIlroy, I think, needs to have things to play for. Through a long career, you're not going to always have your knife sharp. You know, outside of Tiger Woods and Wayne Gretzky, I mean, Magic, Michael, I mean, Tom Brady, it's hard to stay motivated every single week, every single time. And I think that Rory was so disappointed in his play and loves the Ryder Cup so much. And then you throw in this LIV Golf business into the equation, and Rory able to use his voice and perform as an ambassador and spokesperson for the PGA Tour and to win a FedEx Cup for the third time, and now a chance to win the Race to Dubai and join the likes of Henrik Stenson since 2013 to do so. So I just think that with his family life, he loves being a dad. When I walked a hole with him at the U.S. Open at Brookline, we were talking more about parenthood than about his wedges. He just seems to be, the talent is there. But it just seems like, as you say, things granular, things big picture, small picture. It just seems like right now, he looks like a very, very dangerous player going into 2023.
And doesn't he look very different from the guy we saw in Dubai last year when the infamous Nipplegate happened when he lost the tournament on the last hole, got so frustrated he tore his shirt. And that came a couple of months after the Ryder Cup, where he was also emotional because ultimately he realized he just wasted 6 months of his career listening to Pete Cowan at that point. And then he finally got the victory at the CJ Cup when he was back with Michael Bannon, his coach. His expectations suddenly ratcheted up when he realized that his team was really now in place. There was no upheaval at all. Life was good at home. He had the team around him was in place, and he felt as though he was going to move forward. And I think the frustration boiled over because he put himself in position in Dubai last year and didn't do it. But what we've seen out of Rory McIlroy this year is a guy who has all of the pieces in place and has that little motivation, the desire to prove a point.
Yeah.
And we saw that particularly that Sunday in Canada when he got his 21st PGA Tour victory and remarked on how it was one more than Greg Norman. And he has used all the noise around him as fuel. He does look particularly dangerous next year. the weight of not having won a major for 8 years is still going to be carried around with him, though. He can't outrun that. But if he's not measuring himself by it, maybe it does less damage to him.
Seems to have all things clicking right now, the DP World Tour season ender. Meanwhile, the LPGA ends its season. Top players on the year-long CME Globe standings vie for the chance to become the Race to the CME Globe champion. The CME Group Tour Championship begins tomorrow, by the way, Tiburon Golf Club in Naples, Florida. Some fantastic tee times here. You'll see Se-young Kim, champ in 2019. She's with Lizette Salas, two-time champ Jin-young Ko at 11-10. Nelly Korda fresh off a win at the Pelican at 11:20. Ataya Tinikun, Rookie of the Year. She'll join us in just a bit. She tees off at 12:40 p.m. Eastern with Lydia Ko. And Paige McKenzie is on the ground this week at Tiburon Golf Club. She joins us now from Naples. Paige, you've been out on the golf course. Is there a certain hole that will be key this week?
I certainly am looking at the finishing hole. It's just over my right shoulder. The 18th here, it plays 425 yards on the scorecard. So a good length par four, but a lot of what is going on in this hole is going to relate to the wind direction. The wind expected this week will be in the low double digits, moving from the players right to left out of the west. You can see how that hole is all lined with water on the left, so it provides a little bit of visual intimidation. And I think more importantly than that, Damon, is the drama that we could see and how it plays out. Over the history of this golf tournament, so much has been determined on this 18th hole. You can see out of the last 8 years hosted here, five times the tournament's been decided by one shot or less. Going back to 2014, where we saw the three-way playoff that Lydia Ko ultimately won, Charlie Hull was also a close one in her first LPGA Tour win, even though that margin was two shots.
The page, when you add in the significant length, you've got the water, you've got the trees on the right, you've got a lot of pressure in that situation. It's probably not much of a surprise that we've seen our fair share of drama and tragedy on that hole over the years.
Certainly, we've seen a triumph and tragedy. From the positive side, you can go back to Se-young Kim in 2019. This is, I think, my most memorable moment on this golf course and on this hole, where she drains this long putt to ultimately win the golf tournament, and at the time took home a prize of $1.5 million, which was the richest prize in LPGA tournament history for a first-place winner. This year, of course, it's now up to $2 million for the winner. So that's some of the positive that we've seen. Unfortunately, on the flip side of that, you may remember Lexi Thompson in 2017. She had this short putt that would have secured her Player of the Year, going to number one in the world, and a win at this Tour Championship. She still won the season-long race and the bonus money for that great season that she had. But that is one of the moments that is memorable here at Tiburon.
Let's talk about Lexi Page. She's had a couple of painful near misses here, but she's also won at Tiburon. Is there anything about this course that seems to suit her game so well?
I think when you look at the history of winners here, certainly ball striking stands out. And when you consider that Lexi Thompson has been one of the historically best ball strikers on the LPGA Tour, it's no surprise that her record here is so strong. You mentioned it. She actually came back and won this event the following year after that miss in 2018. She also has six top tens total. Her career in this event, all courses considered, because they also played a different golf course, she's made over $1.1 million. It's the fourth best career money tournament in, I guess, her tournament history, and the only non-major in that list. So the best non-major money maker for Lexi Thompson. So certainly one of my favorites this week. She was one of my favorites last week. She was 18-1 to win last week, plus 185 for a top 10. Of course, she finished runner-up last week. I'm keeping an eye on her again this week. Her odds, of course, shortened. 13-1 to outright win and plus 120. So quite a bit shorter on that top 10 number.
Another Florida native, Nelly Korda, coming off her first win of the season, riding momentum into this week. Where are you with Nelly Korda this week?
As bullish as you can get. Damon, it's pretty hard to overlook Nelly Korda this week. Obviously coming off of that win, but also her record here. As good as Lexi Thompson's record is here, Nelly Korda is even maybe stronger when you consider, outside of the fact that she hasn't had a win, in the five starts that she's had here, four of them are top 10s, worst finish, a tie for 19th. So you mentioned it, both of these players, four Florida players, and as Lydia Ko told me this morning, The biggest determining factor is how the grain is going to favor you where the ball lands. So both of those players used to playing in some grainy grass here in Florida.
Huge week on the LPGA season finale. Paige, thanks so much. Enjoy the week.
Thank you very much, guys.
We invite you to watch the final event on the LPGA schedule, the CME Group Tour Championship, Thursday. Coverage begins 2 p.m. Eastern. That's streaming on digital platforms and 3 p.m. right here on Golf Channel and Peacock, all the way up to Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. Final round on NBC and Peacock.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. In March of this year, rookie Ataya Titikon from Thailand won her first LPGA title at the JTBC Classic in Carlsbad, California. At 19 years old, she became the youngest winner on tour since Brooke Henderson won the 2016 Portland Classic, the age just 18. And in September, Titikon became the first rookie in 5 years to win twice in one season, when she defeated Danielle Kang in a playoff. With the win, she also became the fourth Thai player to win multiple times on the LPGA Tour.
It's been a remarkable season for the now 19-year-old, couple wins and 25 starts, 15 top 10 finishes, already clinched the Louis Suggs Rolex Rookie of the Year, and a chance for the Player of the Year with a win in Naples. I tell you what, we talk about how young this game is, and Ataya Titikon is a perfect example of a precocious superstar.
And won her first professional tournament at the age of 14 and has been winning ever since. So she's one of those rare cases of someone who could reach the top of the world rankings at the age of 19. And it doesn't seem as though it's as breakneck a speed as it would be with everyone else. And she's getting very, very close to traction in major championships as well. If you look at fourth, tied eighth, tied seventh are her last three major championship finishes. So she's prowling around the biggest trophies in the game. And she was only just dispatched from the number one ranking in the world by Nelly Korda last week.
And she's talked about the inspiration she's gotten from the Jutanagarn sisters, Aria and Moria, as well as Portanong Patlam, as she was a younger girl trying to find her way through this sport. Just how about that inspiration and seeing like an Aria Jutanagarn who's been the number one player in the world and then believe, you know, if she can do it, I can do it too.
Well, my teenage nieces like to tell me, if you can see it, you can be it. And that's really, it's the Thai version of what we've seen in South Korea from the Sayri Pak influence on generations of players who've come after her. And she may be the most impressive of all Ataya Titikon. She's so composed, so accomplished, and still so young. And she doesn't look as though the pressure is getting to her at all.
And the 19-year-old joins us now from Naples. Ataya, thank you so much for your time. I'm curious, you know, why have you been so comfortable so early in this brilliant rookie season?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's so crazy what everything happening to me this year. I'm not really comfortable or, like, you know, like, that at all. But just I'm so happy that this is my first year being pretty well to me.
Ataya, you've been the world number one. You're Rookie of the Year. You've won twice, and you're still only 19. You men, I can understand why you're not comfortable, but are you surprised at how fast success has come for you?
Kind of surprised, but at the same time, not really, because I think I know that all the people surrounding me had been pushing me and then, you know, like, want me to get better, and then they're supporting me, and then they really helped me to get to this point, and then, you know, like, they're really pushing me up for, you know, for everything.
So you're already Rookie of the Year with a win. You have a chance to be Player of the Year. Early peek at the golf course. How does it set up for your game so far?
Yeah, I have been practicing for 18th and then prayer to pro-am yesterday. The course is in pretty good shape. Why? But I think if the wind picking up, it should be really tough for us as well. But I have to pretty, you know, like, focus on the, you know, the calculating the win and then on the putting as well.
You've been in the top 10 in your last six tournaments, Ataya. You must feel pretty confident going into this week.
Yeah, like 80-90%, not 100%, but it's just really nice. And then to be able to, you know, like be in the last event of the years. And then actually I really need the rest, so hopefully this comes pretty fast and then I can rest for the off season.
Well, lucky for you, it is the last week of work this year. Do you allow yourself to think ahead to potentially winning $2 million on Sunday? Because that would double your LPGA Tour career earnings. It would be a pretty big movement.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I think it's the biggest purse that we had to be on the winner to million, right? And then I guess it's really nice to be able to win, but if not, I think it's just really a good week for me because I think I seem like this week is like a bonus week for us. So I just really want to go enjoy and then have fun. And hope you guys can see my happy face on the course a lot.
We've seen your happy face a lot this year, but nobody can play golf 24 hours a day. You're still a teenager. What do you like to do outside of competing in golf tournaments?
Actually, I do like watching Korean drama or Korean series, and then really like to go hiking on the mountain and, yeah, go hang out with friends.
Speaking of friends, I understand your friends call you Gino. Where does Gino come from?
Yes. Actually, all the Thai people, they have a nickname when, like, it came out when you were born. And then normally my nickname is Jean, not Gino. It's without the O. It's mean like China or like Chinese people in Thailand. In Thai, they mean like that. And yeah, I had like 10% of Chinese or something like that. That's why my mom gave this nickname to me. But one day my coach called me Gino. So I just like, oh, that's nice. And I just like take it from that time.
Ataya or Gino, we hear a lot of players talk about the mental health part of professional golf, the constant travel, endless hotel rooms, the pressure to perform. It's very easy to stop enjoying it if you're doing it for a living. Do you still enjoy it as much as you did when you were even younger than you are now?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think now I'm still enjoy it. Maybe my first year, that's why. But I think I really enjoyed it. But like, I'm glad that I have my manager here. He managed everything for me. And then I'm just go out, enjoy and pay. That's my job.
You won on the Ladies European Tour as a 14-year-old. Success on the LPGA as a teenager. Reminds me a little bit of Lydia Ko, who has said she doesn't want to do this forever. She said maybe age 30. Do you envision yourself having a long career? Do you want to keep playing into your 30s and 40s, or because you started so young that maybe you'll want to check out of here after a decade or so?
Yeah, I mean, what Lydia Ko did, it's pretty impressive. And then Lydia Ko, it's always my favorite players and always my... the one that I always looking for, and then what she did is really impressive, and it's like, it's not like a human doing. She's pretty good at that time, and I'm pretty glad that I play with her tomorrow. But yeah, other thing, it's pretty I think golf is pretty fun to me as well at that time, you know, like be able to won the professional event when I was 14. It's sounds be crazy to me as well, but other thing, it's happened, and I couldn't thank my team that enough for everything that they do it to me too. Without them and without me as well.
Gino, congratulations on Rookie of the Year. Been so fun watching you compete in 2022. Finish strong. Best of luck, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.